Hey everyone, and welcome to the 31st episode of the Untitled Gadget Podcast. We weren't able to record last weekend because we were all otherwise engaged, but we have plenty of device announcements to talk about and that we'll get through in this podcast. And there's also exciting news on the software front. And from what I can understand, there have been 20 million new products launched in the last 2 weeks. So we'll talk about some of those as well. But first, let's take a look at how the guys are doing. Dhruv, let's start with you. How has your week been so far?
So it's just like as if time is a blur and I am existing in a plane of time and space where I have no idea what's going on. But yeah, to put it mildly, it's just been work and there's just device launch after device launch. And I think that's what life is all about now, looking at smartphone launches. But between all of that, like I've been trying to take out a little bit of time to play some video games or just play the guitar for a bit. Not getting too much time for either, but yeah, just a little bit. So it's been mostly work.
Yes. Akshay, what's up?
It's been a hell of a week, man. Just been, well, when Harish said that we were engaged, we were not engaged last weekend, we were fucking hungover, but yeah, that's what happened. apart from that, man, this week has just been full of reviews, products, and fucking Zoom calls, which makes me want to smash my head into the laptop. So yeah, that's why this week has been probably the most annoying week in terms of smartphone launches, because literally everyone wants your money because it's Diwali soon. But yeah, and one of the PR agencies were like, do you have the capacity to review this phone? I'm like, hell no. I mean, you've launched 25 products in the past 1 week. There's no way I'm reviewing this shit. There's no chance. I don't have the capacity. So, I mean, even they realize that there are too many things happening, man. So yeah, that's the week. And I've been playing Breath of the Wild again, sunk in 20 hours without knowing where it went. To be honest, I haven't even scratched the surface of that game. So yeah, that's been my week.
Nice. As for me, I got the Xiaomi 34-inch gaming monitor. This unit finally managed to come through without any issues, so I set that up. It's been interesting to use ultra-wide with Windows because the scaling is just really weird. It doesn't scale across on a 21:9 monitor well. But yeah, an entire day went off in setting that up. Still getting used to it. And I think I set up 7 phones this week. We'll talk about a few of those now. But yeah, man, it's just crazy. Why are brands launching so many goddamn phones in India? It's just absolutely chaotic.
Money.
Well, let's see.
That reminds me of that song.
And money. Trump song.
Was it the Trump song or the Ric Flair song?
No, it was in that in his TV show. That was the intro.
No, I was talking about the one from WWE. Here Comes the Money.
Oh yeah, that's Vince. I think that's Vince McMahon's song.
Oh yeah, that's Vince McMahon, not Ric Flair.
And the other one is from The Apprentice.
WWE used to be fun. Hey, how is it going now without any crowds and all? Did you guys see any games?
I saw. I think I saw some.
WrestleMania?
Yeah, I saw WrestleMania. It was okay. I mean, the Undertaker's final match was fun, I guess. They almost made it like an 80s action movie. Really cheesy. They took him out to a graveyard where he actually stepped out of a grave to go and beat up whoever he was fighting. I don't even remember. It was something.
I've been a very strong fan of the Attitude Era WCW. So I haven't really watched wrestling since then, not religiously the way I used to as a kid. And the only wrestler that I really like is AJ Styles. You know, I've been following him since his days in TNA, and I was excited when he came to WWE because his style is actually really, really fun to watch. He actually wrestles and he's quite innovative. So, yeah, I think if I switch on the TV and I see AJ Styles wrestling, I'll just watch him because he's just great. And some of the Japanese wrestlers that they've brought in on NXT.
Surprisingly, like it's women's wrestling, which has gotten a little more interesting.
Yes, Asuka, Becky, that's what I remember.
Yeah, Asuka is also great. Really good. But yeah, none of the wrestlers really stand out. They don't have that much of a personality that used to be there in the Attitude Era. You know, like, yeah, everybody had this thing going on, like Stone Cold Steve Austin. Like, that guy had a persona. Yeah.
Everyone had something going on.
Man, exactly. That dude went through a lot of beer.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
And without drinking any of it.
And he made them a lot of money too, man. I mean, yeah, that was an incredible time to be a wrestling fan. It's just boring now.
Yeah, it's very generic.
Well, yeah, everything feels very generic these days. But anyway, let's get to the subject matter at hand here. First phone we're talking about is the Pixel 4a. It's finally launching in India on October 16th. We know how much it'll cost. $29,999. That's astonishingly affordable considering it's from Google. So what do you think about the pricing of the Pixel 4a in India?
Okay, I'll go first. All things considered, not bad at all. It is obviously not the most value for money still, but then if you want value for money, you're not buying a Pixel anyway. You're looking at other hardware. You're buying this for the software experience, you're buying this for the updates, you're buying this for the camera. I mean, you're primarily buying it for the camera. So, with that in mind, finally, this is like Google being a little serious. It is still more expensive than the US pricing, but that's to be, like, that was bound to happen. So, you know, it's not that much more. And 30K is all right. Like, it goes up against the Nord. Now, the Nord is more powerful. The Nord has more cameras, but then more isn't necessarily better, etc. So, you know, it's not bad at all. I think this should move some volumes at least.
Yeah.
The way I look at it is, like, you're getting probably one of the best camera smartphones for 30 grand. Even with the iPhone 12 or whatever the hell they call it this coming week, it's still going to stand out more than any other smartphone you've used with that single lens. You know, as Dhruv pointed out, more lenses doesn't mean it's necessarily better. And we all know how shitty the camera on OnePlus phones are, at least in comparison to Pixel. In my opinion, like, if you are into photography, if you really, really want the pure Android experience and some exclusive features that Google is providing, I think it's a fair price for it. I mean, we all know how portrait mode, the night shot, everything else that Pixel is known for, you're going to get it for $30,000. I thought it would be around 40, 45 because, you know, Google being Google, they do tend to do, they've been doing that since the Pixel smartphones came to India. But $30,000, I mean, come on, man, it doesn't get better than that. It can be a great gaming device as well. I want to see how it runs Genshin Impact because I just ordered Razer Kishi. And if it works well, I'm going to convert that into my handheld gaming device as well.
It's an interesting phone for the Indian market because I want to see if Google puts any money in advertising it. And if so, if it only talks about the camera, because yes, the Pixel 4a has the best camera you'll find in this segment. No doubt about that. It's not even, no other phone even comes close. You're getting Pixel 4 caliber shots with this thing. And for 30,000, it's an absolute steal. But it's also a good phone if you want something that's small and easily, it's good for one-handed use because I started using it, I think a day ago, and I really like it. It feels almost like a throwback. The phones from 3-4 years ago, it just feels nice. And considering I was using the Galaxy Note 20 Ultra up until last week, the difference is drastic. Sure, the materials aren't premium. It doesn't have an exciting design, but the basics are all covered. You get 6 GB of RAM, you get 128 GB of storage. Google isn't making any compromises in any key areas. And even though the battery is smaller, it still gets you a day's worth of use. The screen is really good. It has an OLED panel. And you get 3 years of Android updates. And yes, the Snapdragon 730G is not as powerful as the 765 on the Nord, but it is optimized much better. Google has done a fantastic job optimizing the A series pixels. The 4a feels just fine to use in day-to-day use. So it'll be interesting to see if they highlight the other areas where the phone also has decent features.
No, I agree with you. I got it today morning and I've spent a little bit of time playing around with it, and I like it. I like the form factor. But I think there's a, I don't know, there's this thought that, you know, the 4A XL for like, say, 34, 35 might have had a bigger impact on India, where, you know, like a bigger screen size. While I love the smaller form factor, we are generally like spoiled for choice. Like, we have a lot of phones on hand and, you know, we're kind of burnt out on the large screen devices, which might also play into why we like a smaller phone that's a little more handy. That's not generally the case for a lot of people. They have one phone and clearly there is a market demand for larger screen sizes. Add to that the 765 and the secondary lens. I feel that like $100, so that would be worth like around 70-75 hundred rupees. I mean, Google could make it work for around 35k, and at 35k I feel the 4A XL would have had a bigger impact than the 4A in India.
Yeah, but the issue is there's no 4A XL. I think, and I don't understand why they did not launch the 5G enabled variants. I mean, the 4A 5G,
yeah,
is technically the XL model this year. It's just so fucked up there.
Wait, I've been calling it the 4A XL. That's the 4A 5G.
Yeah, so that's what I assumed anyway.
It's not your fault, man. It's just people get confused naming things.
Yeah, that was initially meant to be called the Pixel 5, by the way. So that's
so
it.
So what was the Pixel 5 supposed to be called?
5S, because that has millimeter 5G also. Millimeter 5G.
Oh, forget about it.
Yeah, so initially it was going to be just the Pixel 4A. And then the Pixel 5 was the 4A 5G, and then the Pixel 5 that we have now was the 5S. But anyway, yeah, it's sad that they're not launching the 5G enabled phones in India. But let's see if they decide to change their tack next year.
We really don't have 5G in India right now, so it kind of makes sense to me also.
I mean, that's
sure,
not,
you want
that's
a, you want a phone that's future proof. Yeah, I agree.
I mean, see, as a thought, actually, like, that hasn't stopped anybody else from launching 5G phones in India. I mean, it never has been a deterrent. We had 4G phones when 4G was not in India.
Yep.
So I don't buy that argument. And all said and done, like, you know, sure, Google's done a very good job with this. But like, there is obviously the perception that this is supposed to be a budget phone. It is a budget phone for 30,000 rupees.
That's what I was about to say. Like, they wouldn't probably hit that price if they had the 5G modem in there.
I mean, it is $100. It's just $100 more in the US as well.
Yeah.
So even if you translate that directly, this would be 36,000 maybe. If Google had the audacity to sell the 3A for 40,000, I think the 4A 5G for 35 or 36 even, I think that would have made more sense, because it's easier to justify that phone where, you know that the 765 is actually very close to the performance, or at least the daily performance you need. The 730, we might say, and it will be enough for a whole lot of people. The 765 at the end of the day is a better chipset. There is the double camera, there is the 5G support. So it makes a much better, sell for Google.
It does. And I feel they're being short-sighted by not launching their entire portfolio here, considering they missed out on the Pixel 4 series last year as well. So I think they're still trying to wait and see if the 4A does any meaningful numbers, and they'll evaluate for next year based on that.
See, for me, this phone is all about photography. I haven't come across a phone since the iPhone 11 Pro and 11 that has actually blown me away in terms of photography. Maybe a few phones in the middle, but nothing like Pixel level. And that's exactly what I expect from Pixel phones. When we saw the Pixel 3, Dhruv and I tested out the phone in New York. It was incredible. It blew my mind away. And I was like, fuck, you know, there's nothing else out there like this. And that's exactly what I'm expecting from the 4A as well. You can get the Nord, you can get any other Oppo phone, Vivo phone, Realme phone, but you won't be able to take pictures the way the 4A does. And living in a world where, especially since you're stuck at home, you're always on social media and you want your pictures to look good, the 4A is going to be that phone for everyone. yeah, someone's phone went off. But that's fine. But yeah, I think for me, that's 4A. And it's always going to be that photography phone that will probably be equivalent to, you know, entry-level DSLRs for me. You know, like how we were comparing the Pixel photography to Fujifilm as well.
Like, and this is a 730 related thing where there is noticeable lag in processing. Like when you take a photograph, you go to the photograph, the gallery is still processing it and it takes a couple of seconds. I mean, for 30,000, not the most ideal experience. I mean, you got to look beyond just the camera as well, right? I mean, people are not buying just a camera.
I understand that, but with the Nord and one more device that I'm testing right now, we all are testing right now, you click the picture, it takes fucking 5 seconds just to click that picture. So it's, I'm fine with it processing in the background. I am totally fine with it, as long as the final result is great. I'd rather have a phone that delivers a great picture than taking pictures that look like it's been shot from a potato.
Yeah, that was
a Nord for me. That's been every OnePlus phone, even the Pro models for me, to be honest. It's not that great, at least in low light environments. And I know for a fact that Pixel will deliver on that front.
Yeah, you make a good point there. I haven't had nearly as many issues with OnePlus devices as you have this year. But
oh yeah, we'll talk about that next.
I do understand that there is value in offering a better camera with hardware that may not be as fast. And there is a bit of weight to get those photos. But that's just down to how Google does computational photography, basically. And I think people will understand that and they will realize that based on the caliber of photos they're getting, they're like, okay, it's worth that wait. But then again, that's assuming if anyone actually ends up buying the phone.
Or it may just be a phone for influencers yet again.
No, I mean, also, I appreciate what Google is doing here, and I'm actually glad that, you know, they managed to hit this price point, which is really not bad at all, considering it is being imported, it's not being manufactured in India, so obviously there's the duties, etc. on top.
They're taking a hit for sure.
Which means that, you know, they have some faith in the device. While I agree that the 5 makes no sense for India, nobody's going to spend 50,000 rupees on that phone. I still feel that the 4A 5G, not the 4A XL, would have made more sense for the Indian market. But yeah, that's me. And yeah, I think I've already explained why I think so.
Let's segue into another phone that's not yet out, but we'll be knowing more about next week. Every time I look at how many iPhones are coming, it feels like they added one more model. So Akshay, how many iPhones are we getting next week?
We are getting, at least from what leaks and rumors have suggested, at least 4 of them. It's going to be the iPhone 12 mini, the smaller phone. I think we discussed that in a previous episode. An iPhone 12, an iPhone 12 Pro, and an iPhone 12 Pro Max. Apparently, all 4 phones are going to have OLED displays this time. No LCD bullshit. There have been rumors that Apple may not include chargers with these phones. But then again, all of them support power delivery chargers. So you should be able to get a cheaper option. And apart from that, we can expect to see iOS 14 improvements in the camera department, which I don't know if they're going to talk about in detail or not. Maybe improvements to the night mode and a bunch of other stuff. We got to know more about A14 as well. That's probably going to be the processor that powers all of these 4 phones. And it's more of a CPU focused chipset this time around, and not much of it is still great at GPU performance, but I think it's far faster than when it comes to CPU single thread processors. I think that's what the invite also suggests. What does it say? Speed something like that,
high speed.
So I think it's all going to be about A14 being the king of chipsets yet again this year. I think that's what it's going to be.
I think that's what they're focusing on, because they get to say that they're the first with a 5-nanometer chipset, and they did a decent amount.
That's incredible.
They did a decent amount of architecture level changes with the A14 as well. I think it will benefit both. I don't think it'll be just limited to the single threaded or multi-threaded use cases. I think it'll also lead to a dramatic increase in games. And that's when you consider the iPhone handily beats Android already in gaming performance. So I'm pretty interested in seeing what games they deliver with this generation. Dhruv, did you have any thoughts on any of the design? Did you take a look at some of the leaked renders? Do you have any thoughts on the
I
models?
did, and evidently it's going to be very close to the new iPad design, which I love, and it's almost like a throwback to the iPhone 4 series in
Right.
some
Yeah,
ways,
squarish.
and I love
Yeah.
it. Like that was a classic design. I mean, that phone looks gorgeous even today, so I'm pretty excited about that. There's evidently support for LiDAR,
Yep.
which should, I mean, it's interesting to see how Apple is doubling down on AR in their invites and adding LiDAR support, etc., etc. It lends a bit more credence to the rumors that they might be working on an AR headset. I don't know, like, I don't understand the interplay. Like, AR applications really aren't that big, but yeah, Apple, they've got a long-term vision. So, this might just be building towards something else. But generally speaking, I feel that the lineup is getting a little crowded. But yeah, I guess there's something for everyone.
I mean, it's four phones and not like Realme's 56 phones in a
Yeah, I mean,
month.
crowded as far as Apple goes.
Apple goes. But for the LiDAR sensor, I think there's also it also means better portrait mode photography. You can do that with the iPad Pro as well right now. I think that's the other application apart from AR. Which I'm kind of looking forward to because I'm really not a big fan of portrait images on iPhones. I've never been. It's just been very inaccurate. That's why I love Pixel phones because they may use software, but they're always accurate as hell with their portrait images. And yeah, it matters at least to me because when I'm clicking pictures of my pups or or my wife or friends, I like to take portrait shots because it just looks nice. You can print those and put them in photo albums and stuff. But apart from iPhones, it's not going to be only iPhones. There's definitely a lot of other stuff that Apple might be releasing because iPhones is just one bit of their ecosystem. And I don't know what you guys have heard, but there are a lot of other accessories they're looking into as well.
Yeah, I looked at the headset. Is it the Air Studio?
So yeah, the AirPods
Right.
Studio
I
gonna be
was
the
like, Air Studio.
over-the-head noise canceling headphones that don't have any orientation. Like how you use headphones that have left and right ear cups. It doesn't matter how you wear those headphones. It'll automatically detect it and then switch audio according to that or tune audio according to that. At least that's what the rumors are suggesting. It's gonna have a very similar look to what the Marshall headphones look like, a classic look. Not going to be the Beats headphones look. And apart from that, they're looking at launching AirTags, maybe a wireless charger as well, like a single pad wireless charger. And then a bunch of other stuff that keep coming up, like a smaller HomePod, probably HomePod Mini, I think that's what they will call it. So yeah, a lot of stuff that they're looking into for building up the ecosystem.
I mean, like how
Apparently.
they're doing an ecosystem play. They're being smart about it. They're not rolling out too many products, but they're focusing on areas where they know they'll obviously do well, like the audio and then yeah, smart home stuff. And I think the LiDAR is particularly interesting in that context because I think they've already invested a decent amount of money there, and I think they're trying to just build out what they can from that ecosystem.
Yeah,
But as we're on the
hopefully.
subject of that, as someone who uses all of their products, what do you make of that ecosystem play? Where do you see that going?
I think it's probably going to be a more of a budget push for everything apart from AirPods Studio, like the smaller HomePod Mini, because I think it'll be more affordable. They really want to push Siri into homes. Maybe even have I think iPhone 12 Mini is for people who don't really want those larger screens, they've always been doing that size, and it's probably going to be the cheapest phone from the entire lineup, just like how iPhone 11 was. And I don't know if you guys have heard, iPhone 11 is going to sell for 50 grand during the Diwali sale. That's an incredible price, even even for this year's standards. Even after the iPhone 12 launches, iPhone 11 is a great phone to purchase. So I think Apple has realized that they can't really charge an Apple tax for all of their products. They really need to, you know, capture the market in terms of in other areas, like in Asia, in parts of Eastern Europe, in parts of Africa, you know, where not necessarily everyone can afford $1,000 phone, which is why we saw iPhone SE, Apple Watch SE. I think that's the strategy this year onwards, that yes, we will have our extremely expensive products, but right, we will also have something for everyone else. I think that's what they're
putting. Yeah, it's Apple going the OnePlus route. Yeah, absolutely.
No, I love it, man. Why the hell not?
Their products are great. Whether you like the operating system or not, that's a personal choice, but the products are definitely great. And more choice for customers, why not? It's fantastic.
Yeah, I've been looking at their product positioning, and it is very clever. They know that their user base in markets like the US and UK is saturated, because everyone there has either already an iPhone or a Galaxy or whatever. So they're, I think, being more aggressive when it comes to launching affordable variants aimed at Asian markets than they would have been a year or two ago, because that gives them access to a much more wider user base. It is a very clever strategy, because with the SE models of the phone and the watch, and now the iPhone 12 mini maybe slotting in for less, and with its introduction, the iPhone 11 being available for around that 50,000, 55,000 price point, it gives them a lot of variety. It gives customers a lot of choice, actually, because now the iPhone SE is like, what, 40,000? And then it goes all the way up to whatever the 12 Pro
even,
Max.
Even with the new iPad lineup, man, that's affordable as hell as well. iPad Air and the 7th Gen, 8th Gen, whatever, I forget what it's called. The 2020 iPad.
8th Gen.
The bezels. 8th Gen, there you go. I also love the fact that Apple might be pushing for games quite a bit this year, especially with the new rumored Apple TV that may have the A12X Bionic chipset or even the A14 chipset, one of the two, and it may just be a home console for them. It's powerful enough to run a lot of the games that launch on all three current gen consoles.
Yeah.
And the fact that you can connect your Apple TV with an Xbox controller or a PS4 controller, probably Xbox Series X and PS5 controllers as well, that's probably Apple's game console for homes and who want to play games on arcade. So I think they are covering their bases in almost every front. The iPad is a game. I always look at iPad as a great gaming machine as well, as well as a, you know, creative machine for graphic designers. But Apple TV, apart from just being a box for entertainment, you can also play games if they're powered with these chipsets. They have everything covered. They don't really need to do anything else. Just follow these products for the time being.
Yeah, we'll obviously have much more to talk about next week once we actually know what the products are. But I'll end with one note. I got the Apple Watch Series 6 this week and I started using it, and it is fantastic. I use a lot of Wear OS smartwatches and all the Xiaomi stuff and the Tizen, Samsung things, and this is on another level in terms of just how well optimized it is for that wrist-based interactions. I mean, for that small screen form factor, right? Everything feels intuitive. And this is the first time I've been using an Apple Watch, and I understand now why they have such a loyal user base. As someone who's used the product for a few years, what do you think of the Series 6, Akshay?
So this is where we will be a little bit different, not because of anything, for the sole reason that you mentioned that this is the first time you've used the watch, and I've been using it for a while, for like three, four years now. For me, it's like an incremental upgrade of an already fantastic product. The Series 5 is still a great smartwatch to own even right now, apart from the blood oxygen reading feature. That's right. The only difference that's keeping them apart from each other. And the Series 6 for me is just an incremental upgrade that looks the same and but it's a little bit faster because of the new updated hardware and a little bit of new features that have been added. But apart from that, it's a perfect smartwatch that has been fine-tuned with added new features. That's the way I look at it. A great product that's been made a tad bit better. That's why our opinions are a little bit different, because you're using it for the first time and I'm using it for the past few years. But it's still the best damn smartwatch to own. Whether you get a Series 5, Apple Watch SE, or Apple Watch Series 6, no matter which one you get, you are sorted.
I had a quick thought though, like before we move on to the next topic. Just chiming in from the earlier conversation, I feel that the SE isn't going to get an update anytime soon. I think it's going to become another one of those models like the previous generation SE, which just stuck around for a really long time and Apple just kept on dropping the price. Possibly a price drop to 35,000, eventually, hit the 25,000 rupee price as well in another year or so with the iPhone 12 mini slotting in that price range, say 40,000 to 50,000. I feel that could be the case, and this eventually becomes the most affordable iPhone, as was the case with the previous generation SE as well. And that phone sold gangbusters in India. Like a couple of years down the line after launch, it was still being sold in India, and people were lapping it up because, hey, it's an iPhone, and it was still getting updates. So I feel that, that might be the case that's going to be going on with the new iPhone SE as well.
Yeah, I think you're spot on about that. That it will run for a few years at least, for amongst Indian users who don't really want to spend, as I said, for the premium Apple tax, they don't want to pay that. But it's still a powerful phone, man. It's powered by the A13 chipset. I think the only thing that holds it back is the design. To be honest, it's a dated design,
right?
And I do feel that phone is more for an audience like my parents, I think for the older generation a little bit, who got used to that. To that design, the iPhone 4, iPhone 5 design. It will attract new first-time iPhone customers as well because of the low price. But I think with the iPhone 12 launch and with the iPhone 11 going at an incredible price, the iPhone XR is still selling like hotcakes. So it's giving a lot of options for people.
That's where I absolutely agree with you. Like if you remember the old iPhone SE, that was following the iPhone 5S styling. When the rest of the lineup had already moved on. And if you look at it, the iPhone SE is pretty much the only iPhone right now which is following the iPhone 6 or whatever, 8, till the iPhone 8.
It's that last iPhone style which has just become
so ingrained as the idea of an iPhone. So, that familiarity itself works for the audience which wants the iPhone but, doesn't want to pay foil price or big money for the iPhone experience. And I mean, if you think of it like that, it's actually a brilliant move.
And it's an absolutely fantastic marketing strategy too, because in terms of manufacturing costs, this thing costs them next to nothing. They've already, the tooling for this is 3-4 years old. It would have paid for itself several times over. So the longer they sell this, the more margin they get to make out of it. Mm-hmm. And it's just a really smart move to launch that product when they did.
And let's not forget, it has a better camera than most of the budget Android phones. We forget that. Yeah, it is the cheapest iPhone out there, but it can do a lot of things that the iPhone XR can do.
Yeah.
It's almost identical. Yep.
That's true. Well, let's move on from iPhones to what Samsung has been doing of late in India. We get to the Samsung Galaxy S20 Fan Edition, the S20 FE. So we got to know that the phone is now on sale in India this week, and it costs $49,999. Dude, I know you like the phone a lot. Why do you like it?
Well, leave aside the Exynos chipset, it's generally a good package. I like the compromises that they've made. The design is nice. I know Exynos is problematic. I've already faced issues with it. Like even during setting up, it was heating up. But generally speaking, if somebody wants a premium Samsung phone, does not want to go the Chinese route, and there are people who want that, and especially in the offline market, Samsung is pretty strong there as well. From that point of view, for 50,000 rupees, it makes a really good case for itself. The battery life is pretty decent. Like I mean, it's all day battery life. Cameras are classic Samsung, so you know there is that slight oversaturation. The HDR is, well, exactly what Samsung HDR is. All over the place. Not a huge all fan of place. It, but there are people who swear by it. So, you know, it's like a greatest hits version of a Samsung phone. Including the greatest misses, the worst which is hits. The Exynos. If people have been using Samsung phones for a while, you know, upgrading from an S10 or whatever, they're already used to the mess that is the Exynos chipset. So for them, you know, there's nothing new here. I mean, nothing lacking here because they're already used to heating issues or, you know, like not as good performance as you'll get on another phone. A lot of those issues that we point out are comparative by nature. Like, you know, when we place it against something else, but if somebody's already has always been in the Samsung ecosystem, and I know people who will not move, who are unwilling to move out of the Samsung ecosystem, for them, it's a perfectly good phone.
Yeah.
The way I see the phone, I'm going to give two perspectives. One, a personal opinion, and one personal preference. In my personal opinion, I think this is a great phone for people who want to get a Samsung phone that doesn't cost too much. Yes, the Exynos chipset can be problematic, but 90% of the stuff that you do on your phone on a daily basis, it's perfectly fine. You will see some overheating problems, but over time, and knowing how Samsung works, they will fix it with an OTA update, at least with some thermal management when it comes to processes, when you're using some intensive apps. Although in my case, I was browsing Reddit, and it froze up for a few seconds, but it's fine. It gets over it quite, you know, quickly. But in my personal preference, I would say I don't really like this phone because that's my personal preference of the fact that I'm spoiled in terms of choice when it comes to review units. There will be the 7T launching soon with an 865 or 865 plus chipset.
8T.
There's 8T, sorry. Yeah, fuck, man. Or the 8, OnePlus 8 Pro, I'm still using that as a daily driver. Or the Note 20, which is I use for watching stuff because of that beautiful display. But that's my personal preference. Don't go by my personal preference. If I have to recommend someone who's looking for a great phone that gives you the most features, the S20 Fan Edition has wireless charging. It has great cameras, as Dhruv said, for a set of people who like Samsung cameras.
I mean, it's got fast charging. Sorry, I'm cutting you off there. But display. Like, you know, you pitch it next to, say, a OnePlus. It is a better camera. So
it's still better.
Yeah.
It is definitely a better camera. Or even a Realme camera for that matter. But so that's where I'm coming from. My personal preference might not be because of the Exynos chipset, but for 90% of the people out there who don't look at spec sheets just because, you know, they're stupid enough to do that, you have to look beyond the spec sheet in terms of features. Samsung has a lot of features. It's got Knox that nobody talks about.
Yeah.
It's got, a lot of camera exclusive features like Top Shot. What is it called?
Single take.
So many, you know, these things you will not find.
For that matter, Good Lock, actually the app that they have, that is incredible for customization.
Yeah. It is. Exactly. Good Lock is like a gold mine that once you find it, you're like, where has this pain?
Well, it does, like, it's all my life. Like, you know, speaking of which, for apps for those it does. Notch
it's insane.
Notifications. Yeah. Sorry, go on, actually.
Speaking of, you actually brought me to my next point. One UI is probably my second favorite skin.
Android they've done a really good job on that.
Oxygen OS. Yeah. So, you know, yeah, they have. And the fact that Oxygen OS, we will be talking about that, Oxygen OS 11 has taken cues from One UI, that just shows that Samsung is doing a good job there as well. Plus the added benefit that you can use it with Samsung TVs and all the entire ecosystem, Buds Live. You get the whole package with the S20 FE. So yeah, just because Exynos 990, and you've heard bad stuff about it from myself included, doesn't mean that phone is not capable of being a 2020, you know, semi-flagship phone to use. That's what I call it. It's right there. Except, just, yeah, 990 can fuck up.
Like, there's some things which only Samsung phones do right now. Like, you know, connectivity with two Bluetooth headsets simultaneously, for example.
I think I just...
Yep.
Yeah, I think I just sold the phone for them. I think I did the entire
marketing thing for them that they should be doing. There's a shitload of things that are really good about Samsung phones in general. Like, they came from fucking TouchWiz, which was a steaming pile of garbage, to One UI, which is actually genuinely really good. Unless you really, really care about stock Android, which is great as well. But, you know, I can live with a good interface. I mean, I don't mind.
Speaking of... Yeah, Samsung phones, Fold 2 is probably my phone of the year. It's such a different phone. It's such a great phone in terms of performance, everything, playing games. I was playing Genshin Impact on that. When you open it up, it's like a Kindle OSS. It's perfect for reading comic books. I mean, you think about it, there's no other phone like it.
Yeah.
And my dogs agree with me.
Maybe it's biting on the Fold
2. Yeah, and the fact that it's just... different. I'm not bored of that phone whenever I open it up, right? Like, there are like 20 phones sitting in our our, you know, whatever mailbox area where we receive phones, and all of them look identical to each other with some subtle differences, but the Fold 2 is very different from everything else. But only Samsung is doing that.
Yeah, but that's what Samsung does best. It introduces new form factors. Even when you look at the Note series, right, with the stylus, it pioneered that back at a time when phones were tiny and bezels were bigger than the size of the screen itself. So that's what it does really well. It introduces new tech and it gets them to a point where they're consumer ready, because look at the state of the foldables before Samsung came along.
Got it right this time.
Yeah. They had issues, sure, with the first generation foldables, but they did a great job fixing that too. And I think that's the key takeaway for 2020 Samsung products. The Note 20 and the S20, they're iterative updates, but it's clear that Samsung is interested in the next frontier. So it's focusing its attention on things like foldable form factors and turning its efforts there. And for more mainstream products, yeah, they'll still continue to churn out similar designs with iterative updates.
Yeah, I think
even the Z Fold was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, Samsung strategy, I don't know, there's a lot of, I think for one, like before we move on to the next bit, is that perspective is kind of key, where Exynos on the Note 20 Ultra, which is what, like 80,000 rupees, 90,000 rupees? No, it goes up to like a lakh something. Yeah, a lakh rupees.
1 lakh.
Justified to call that out, because it is a whopping 1 lakh rupees. But 50,000 rupees, I'm sort of willing to overlook, you know, that, because there is so much else that you're getting. So much else that you're getting over the competition as well. Like, I mean, it's the most obvious competitor is OnePlus. There's wireless charging. There are better cameras.
Yeah.
Much as I love Oxygen OS, One UI actually adds genuinely useful features. So, you know, there is a... I mean, you got to balance that as well. You cannot just run off a paper spec sheet. Yes, I would have preferred a Snapdragon chipset. Does the Exynos make it a no-go? No. That's basically the point that I've been trying to make, you know, since we started talking about the FA.
Yeah, that was the point I wanted to make, but you basically said everything. that is the context I was going for as well. For 50,000, you can easily excuse some of the issues with the Exynos 990. Yes, it's not as good as the Snapdragon, but then the point that you made earlier, where all Samsung phones to this point in India have been powered by Exynos design. So its customers will get better performance because they're already coming from an Exynos. They're not coming from the Snapdragon 855 or 865. They're coming from something that was powered by Exynos, so like the 9810 or the 9820. So in that context, yeah, the Exynos 990 will feel like an upgrade. So I think they've landed something really well here, and they've positioned it for 50,000. That has the potential to do really well in that particular category. I don't know. I've really liked using mine. I didn't think I would end up liking the phone as much as I did, but I do.
Yeah, and I kind of love the form factor as well. You know, that 120Hz
exactly.
display is gorgeous. It's a flat screen, which I generally prefer. I really, really like the phone.
Come to think of it, from what we've seen with the 8T and the S20 FE, they look very, very similar. Very, very similar.
Well, I mean, that teal color
even
seems
the
to
back
be very
side.
Similar.
Mm. Even the flat screen size, at least from what I've seen from leaks, the 8T is also apparently flatter than the 8 Pro or 8, see the 8 series, the backside camera module.
I
looks
guess that's something to talk
identical.
About on next week's episode.
Maybe, I don't know. Yeah. So this is why I need many, many Fold devices in my life.
But yeah, okay. I mean, Harish, like what you said about the Fold, absolutely agree with you over there. Increasingly, if you look at it from a broader perspective, it really seems that the Note Ultra isn't necessarily going to be the flagship phone for Samsung anymore. There's only that much more that they can add to the stylus functionality anyway. If you look at it, it's a pretty iterative update over last year. There's a new design, sure, everything else, but and it's faster, but in the bigger scheme, it's really not that huge an upgrade. The Fold, on the other hand, was a massive step forward, and it's more affordable in India. And you know, that delta between spending 1,10,000 on the Note 20 Ultra and 1.5 on the Fold, which adds so much more, is not as big.
I have a feeling
exactly.
The Note series is going to become the Fold, or the Fold series is going to become into the Note series, because the Fold 2 is crying for a stylus. That's what it needs. That's
so,
the only thing missing.
So here's the context there. They're pushing to other form factors because they've maximized what they can do with regular devices. I mean, they've hit the delta in terms of pricing. The Note 20 Ultra is $1,400. That's the maximum they can get out of that form factor. Next year's devices, they'll probably be around the same price as what they'll launch the S20 and Note 20 series with, because they cannot, I mean, regardless of how many new features they put on the phone, they cannot ask for much more from it. So where do they look now to generate that next big flagship? The foldable series, because that starts off at $2,000 and it can go to significantly more, and customers will be willing to pay more because it's brand new tech, it's exciting, it makes phones exciting all over again, right? So yeah, Samsung has been really good at doing that over the last decade. That's why it's the number one manufacturer in the world. It knows how to make money, and it knows how to do it several times a year.
I mean, it dominates the display market, so they know what they're doing.
Sure, those are all different entities. They have their wins in their own categories. I'm talking particularly about the phone business.
But think about it, in every category they're doing well, man. Like the TV segments, they're doing well. The phone segment, they're doing well. And in contrast, look at Sony. They don't even have their own trademark for the PlayStation 5.
That's
a
good segment.
Sony
phone. Let's just dive into that itself, then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about that.
Actually, give us the details. What is going on with
PlayStation? What do I say? Like, you know, we've been complaining about that we don't have a price and a launch date for the PlayStation 5 in India. And I think we know why. Because somebody else owns the trademark for the console. And that person filed it 3 months before Sony even thought of doing it. I'm not going to say the person's name because that person has already received a lot of shit online from PlayStation fans, and if you're one of them, please stop, guys. It's not his fault, it's Sony's fault that they were sleeping on this, and he just took advantage of that situation. It's hilarious. But this guy from Delhi who owns the trademark, and I think they're still in dispute for that.
Yeah.
I think Sony will win that dispute, but still, you know, it's kind of hilarious that they didn't know that they were selling the PS5 in India in November or December. What? I don't know what the reason was.
I laugh so hard when I read this story, and it's just,
I mean, who didn't?
It's just funny on so many different levels.
It's meme worthy. It became a meme as well. I think I saw it somewhere.
It's just absolutely crazy. It just shows just how little Sony gives a shit about India. that it failed to register the trademark until what, February 2020. I
Being
think.
the number one console company in the world, yet it doesn't give a shit. That's
But then
embarrassing.
again, the sales never really match up, right? Like, India's a drop in the bucket. So, from a business point of view, India really does not matter.
It's still crores and crores of rupees, man.
And it's
Come on.
many
I mean, it's
more
sure
thousands
it's
of
in the overall.
elsewhere where they can allocate more, units.
Yeah, but when you're looking at, when you're the Sony PlayStation India head or Sony India head, and you're looking at releasing a new product in the country, I mean, that's true for every product, be it iPhones, be it headphones, you know, be it any computer, gaming gear. But US has always been the dominating factor.
No, it's not.
But that's
not
an excuse,
but
I would say that.
The only... they have, absolutely.
Yeah,
I mean,
they've dropped the
you
ball.
You and I, we've been like really excited. Like, we got Harish to commit to buying a PlayStation. And that's an achievement in itself. But...
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not, you know, excusing them for it. But I can see the business sense. You know, if supplies are already constrained, you know, you send them to a market where they're going to get more value out of it, as in like people are going to buy more games for the console as well. Like, I mean, these are going to be 5,000 rupee games, and you know, people are not going to be buying 6,000 rupee controllers, you know, as many people as, you know, as in Europe or in the US. So from a business point of view, I can see if that is the reasoning why they would just allocate these units to a different market.
But that is my biggest point, and one, sorry, Akshay, and one I've been
yeah,
making
yeah.
for a while. Why not just tell us that? Why not just tell us when the fuck it'll show up and how much it'll cost and say, hey, it's not coming until mid-2021. That's just because we have limited availability. That's it.
You know, even if India is not the priority, I understand all of that. It still shouldn't stop you from registering your own product. That's what I'm trying to say. It doesn't matter if you sell 10 products or 20 products. At least own your own. Just own your damn trademark. And I think, Harish, that's probably the reason why they're not telling us, because it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing for them to admit that. But thanks to Rishi. Rishi is the one who found all this stuff and reported on this. So, you know, if it weren't for Rishi, we wouldn't be talking about this right now.
Yeah.
And it's thanks to good reporting by him and whoever else that dug it up, that this issue has reached the US as well. It's reached global audiences. I think I saw Harish's story everywhere in every forum. So, you know, it was quoted as a source for a meme as well. That's how big it became, by the way. I forgot to send that to you.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's not that only Indians care about this stuff. Everyone else does. Everyone have their vigilant eyes on Sony. And it's just embarrassing for them to... Because it's the internet, right? Information will flow no matter what you do.
And, you know,
and now that it's
point,
out there,
like,
it's
not just
very...
video games, but the business of video games is also much more relevant than it used to be. You know, from, you know, crunch hours at game devs, harassment, but also shit like this. So people are a lot more invested into the entire development process, the
ecosystem.
And it's just gross incompetence from Sony India.
It's whenever there's something you're passionate about, right? Whether it's movies or games or Star Wars or Star Trek or Lord of the Rings. And gaming is one of them, one of those things that people are so passionate about that they get so into it that they want to know every aspect of it. You know, no matter what, whether, as you mentioned, whether it's, you know, crunch time at devs or Sony's incompetency to register a trademark or the fact that what game is releasing this week, they want to know everything. And they are the most forthcoming readers out there. The gaming industry is full of passionate people for different kinds of genres, right? And whenever someone's passionate about something, they will talk about it nonstop. I do it, we do it all the time. That's why this podcast also exists, because we're passionate about things. And it's just that Sony doesn't care about those passionate people. That's what I feel, at least in India.
Yeah, it's a shame. But hey, thanks, Rishi, if you're listening, for the laughs and the traffic that post did insanely well. I ended up writing a short thing because it was just so crazy. I didn't believe that they didn't actually own the trademark. And yeah, you're right about it being picked up everywhere because the traffic from it was like 60% US or something. So yeah, that was good for a
And
few
yeah,
laughs.
I hope it drove some good traffic to the Mako reactor as well. They've been doing some really good work over the last, I don't know, I think they've been around for at least a year now. And yeah, I mean, bit of a shame that so many other publications didn't link back to them or, you know, didn't, or got their name wrong. But that's these, yeah.
What?
Republic quoted
Yeah.
them and
That was
called
Republic.
them the Nako reactor. Or the Narco reactor, I'm not quite sure.
I don't know what it was, but
But
yeah, she tweeted that out. I was laughing my ass off. And then what's that guy, the unboxer therapy guy? He posted a video about it as well. And that's when you know that it's gone mainstream. And he didn't even credit. Well, I mean, sure, you're a YouTuber, and you probably don't have the time to research it. But at least put the right credit, right? He showed off some other story from some other website,
let's
and
not talk about YouTubers
original
now.
source was, yeah. But you know, like small websites like Rishi's need
Yeah.
that traffic, to be honest. You know, you probably linked back to him, and you did, and he probably got traffic out of that. You know, like big publications like ours, sure, we can get by it, but small publications need that extra traffic.
Yeah,
So
I
yeah.
started out with a small publication. I know how much link backs matter and also, yeah. It still astonishes me that the broader Indian blogging scene just doesn't give two shits about linking back to sites and or even acknowledging the correct source. Yeah.
I mean, we have journalists who don't even
I
know
mean,
what
here's the thing,
citation means,
like
so.
Harish, I think you'd agree.
Oh,
Like you look
right.
at the North American blogosphere where, you know, there's this camaraderie towards growing the industry together.
Yes.
And India, like, it's
Yeah.
just one against the other. No sense of ethics, but that's going to be a discussion for another day. But yeah, great job, Rishi. Better journalism than most, better gaming journalism than most in India for sure.
Hundred
Hundred
percent.
percent.
Yeah, obviously. That was a fun. Well, that was a shit show for Sony, but good for
Fun
us.
for us.
Yeah, fun for us. Okay, let's talk about something else that's fun for me. Though not necessarily the same for you guys. OxygenOS 11. I believe I've talked a lot about it, but OnePlus actually started rolling out the stable one OxygenOS 11 release today for the OnePlus 8 and OnePlus 8 Pro.
And just for the
And it is
record, this
the
is
first.
Saturday, October 10th. So today morning is when they started the rollout.
Yeah. And
I haven't got it yet.
Google released Android 11 32 days ago. OnePlus is the first manufacturer to actually roll out a stable OTA. Nobody else has a public beta. Xiaomi, Oppo, Realme, those guys are doing closed betas, but they're very limited closed betas. So forget a stable release. There's no way to get a public beta of Android 11 unless you're using a Samsung phone and you are in Korea. But that's also a limited public beta. So yeah, OnePlus did a lot of things right. They committed to timely updates and they've delivered on that front last year. They delivered on that front this year. The 8T will come with Android 11 out of the box. And the OnePlus 8 and 8 Pro already have the, well, I'm getting the stable Android 11 update now. And they committed to rolling out the update before the end of the year to the 2019 portfolio. So they're doing all the right things when it comes to software.
Yes, they are.
Now, do we
That's
talk
about it.
about?
And the fact that they're copying a lot of the non-US stuff, which we'll talk about next week. But yeah. Oh, I mean, there's been a lot of pushback from the fans. Let's not ignore that. I'm one of them.
Well, I led the charge, I think, for the pushback, but
Although one thing that most OnePlus users probably won't know about is that if you have OxygenOS 11, your phone will be able to now charge using PD chargers. I didn't know that before. I got to know recently, but yeah, PD chargers will work with
But they
OnePlus
worked
8 and
earlier.
OnePlus 8 Pro at
Oh
least.
no, no,
No,
it
it
won't.
won't.
Worked earlier as well.
Yeah, it does.
No, it won't.
No, but it worked
Yeah,
without
it
OxygenOS
will
11 as
work.
well.
I mean, what I meant was warp charge,
Wait,
the
hang
new
on.
charging tech they're
I
getting
think I
out
missed the
with.
point.
It's
No,
using.
so evidently the charger for the OnePlus 8T, or have they announced this already?
They did not.
Think
And
so.
also, first, before we get to other stuff, the 8 Pro is still limited to 30 watt only on one
Yeah.
charge. If you
It's 18.
Use it
Really?
with a PD charger,
Yeah, with
it
PD.
will not go to.
No, that I know. I mean, what I mean, the new
Oh, yeah.
65
so
watt
the...
charger they're coming out with. That is going to have. That is going
yeah,
to
yeah,
have.
Yeah.
Like,
so that's
I think they will
different.
sell that separately
Like, but
as
then
well.
the phones could charge at 18 watts over PD anyway. Yeah, but
yeah,
I
charging
I don't know.
But they could only do 10. They didn't. They never hit 18. The standard itself was limited to 10 on anything that
No,
is
I'm
in
pretty
both
sure.
charge.
Yeah, but now that's going to change. For example, like the new
Yeah.
65 watt charger they're coming out with, like it will charge with warp charge. For example, it's a new, it's completely different from what is being used in 8 Pro. So you need to be on Oxygen OS 11
No,
Pro
no,
to
no, no,
work
no.
on
So the
45 watt
charger
PD
does
or something like
65
that.
watts with the phone, but it does 45 watt PD as well.
Yeah.
So your laptop, if it does supports like
yep.
45,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, of course it does. Yeah, or any other phone.
Or any other phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More,
yeah. Any other
I
any other
don't
device.
Think there's any phone that
the
does
Switch,
like
whatever.
45 watt PD in it, like, well, the Note 10.
Note 10.
But everything else,
Note 10.
I mean, if you're charging your MacBook, it'll charge at 45 watts with the charger, with the 65 watt charger.
The Xiaomi Mi 10 also does, the Indian
Over
model
PD.
does 30 watts, right? With PD. And then the Mi 10 Pro
Yes, I
does
haven't
50
tried
over
out the
PD.
Pro, so I don't know about that. But yeah, so, well, there's a couple of phones,
Yeah.
but it's mostly going to be useful with your laptop because you can sort of, especially an Ultrabook.
Yep.
Laptop,
yeah, or the
iPad.
iPad.
Laptop,
Oh, yeah,
iPad, Nintendo Switch.
Well, that's
or
nifty.
Samsung tablets.
Yeah.
Yep.
Excited. So next week we'll have a lot more to talk about the 8T and the iPhones. Is there anything
and
else?
And the
coming?
FE. S20 FE. We've already talked about
Yeah,
that.
We talked
is
enough
still
about
an
the
embargo
S20
that
FE.
There is. I mean, yeah, I think the
on the FE?
I think the review embargo is on the 16th. Well, the Indian embargo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, good to know at the end of the show.
I mean, we haven't talked about anything.
I mean,
we were allowed to post first impressions, and I suppose a podcast is a first impression.
We haven't reviewed the phone yet. We haven't given a verdict on the phone, nothing. We just talked about what the Exynos chipset is based on other phones and what other features it has based on other phones. So yeah, and wireless charging, you know, all the other features that have already been
But here's the thing.
I haven't given a verdict.
Like,
I
stop
don't understand.
Launching a million phones and
Sorry,
having these weirdly staggered embargoes, because this is the kind of shit which happens. Nobody can keep a track of this.
I don't care anymore. Fuck track. I don't care anymore.
Yeah, I feel it is particularly dumb to have an embargo after a phone is on sale. Like, you can go buy the damn thing.
Yeah, that's when everything stops for me.
Oh, well. Let's talk for 5 minutes about Nest Audio, because
yeah.
Google is also bringing that to India alongside the Pixel 4a. It will be available for 7,000. As an introductory offer, and after that it'll be 8,000, and you can buy it at all those retail stores that where you can pick up a Chromecast or Google Home now. The Nest Audio is larger and has bigger drivers than the Google Home, and I like the design. What about
well,
you?
Well, I got one sitting right here, so it's definitely an upgrade. It looks like somebody squished the Nest Mini and like stretched it out a little bit. It looked a little better in promo photographs. It's a bit of a shame that Google hasn't brought all the colors to India. It's just the dark gray and the light gray, or whatever they call it. It's all right. Like, it doesn't look bad at all, but it's all right. The design. There's nothing this... It'll fit most decors, but it's not going to stand out, which is maybe what Google intended. But there's nothing distinctive about the design either. But I like the use of recycled materials. That's definitely great. It doesn't look ugly, and it doesn't look so bizarre that you'll have to figure out where to place it, as in the case of the new Echo. I mean, I like the orb, but it's also going to look like a magic ball sitting on my desk.
It looks like the Palantiri from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. Or, you know, like I'm going to paint it to look like a dragon ball. A lot of different use cases there. But yeah, see, that's the thing. Like, fitting that orb into your decor is going to be a little more complicated than fitting this somewhat unimaginative piece of speaker. But I've tried it out for a little bit. Not bad. Not bad at all. The sound is pretty good. Bass, despite saying that it's got 50% more, not too sure about that. Then again, it's coming, it's 50% more of nothing. So, you know, the original Google Home did not have any bass at all. So this is certainly an improvement over that, but I wouldn't say that. I mean, the Echo definitely does much better over there. But yeah, I mean, more thoughts on it later in the week. I mean, maybe in the next episode when we've all had some time with it. I literally just tried it.
Yeah.
And then we don't forget our embargoes.
No, it's been on sale in the US.
Yeah, I mean, I just listened to it for like 15 minutes. But yeah, for like podcasts and stuff, there's like the highs and the mids are very well controlled. And there's a slight emphasis on the mids, which basically means like your acoustic stuff, or if you're listening to a lot of podcasts like ours, that is going to sound really nice. I think that's where it has a bit of an edge over the Echo as well. Interestingly, that was the case with the Mi speaker as well, the Mi Smart speaker, which maybe we should touch upon a little bit because it's something that I don't think we missed out, like, since we didn't record last week. Once again, like, there's a definite boost in the mids on the Mi Smart speaker as well. But if you go to the Google Home setting and bump up the bass, the Mi Smart speaker actually responds pretty well to the minor EQing that you can do in the app. You'd be surprised that for a really affordable smart speaker, just the kind of controlled bass that it can output. So for $3,500, that's actually a ridiculously good deal. And maybe, just maybe, and I'll have to like leave this for next week, I might just recommend the Mi Smart speaker over the Nest Audio.
Oh, that's a bold claim.
Well, I haven't used Nest Audio yet, but I'm waiting for it to arrive before the actual embargo lifts, if we have one. But yeah, I'm waiting for that to arrive soon. And when that comes, I'll listen to it as well. I do like the Mi Smart speaker for the price, to be honest. It's a great smart speaker to have for $3,500. And although I do find that the lower frequencies were lacking a bit. But yeah, it's something that you can use in a small or medium sized room.
That's the thing, right? For $3,500, you'll only get the Nest Mini or the Echo Dot.
It should be $6,000. This thing should be $6,000 to be
honest. In that context, it's an absolute steal if you want to just get into a smart speaker for the first time.
I mean, just for a bit more context, I read some tweets and evidently there are some reviews where they're saying that the Nest Mini sounds better than the Mi Smart speaker. That's absolute bullshit. It does not. The Mi Smart speaker blows away the Nest Mini and the Echo Dot. Like, it literally blows it away. Not bother looking around for the review, but yeah, there were a couple of them and they were surprisingly...
I mean, the sheer driver size is indicative of the fact that it will have better sound. It doesn't, I mean, maybe you're talking about the audio tuning that you can manually adjust, but there's no way in hell that an Echo Dot or a Nest Mini can even compete with the Mi Smart speaker.
Just look at the physical volume of the device, right? Like, it's bigger. That means it obviously has a passive radiator. That alone just like explains why the bass response is better. The driver is bigger. And that does not mean that the Nest Mini is redundant. No, there's like a lot of use cases for it. For example, like I got it sitting in my restroom where the Mi Smart speaker would be too big and I can just like hang the Nest Mini from my wall socket.
Yeah.
But yeah, that does not mean that the Nest Mini sounds better. It certainly does not. I mean, the yeah. Respawn speaker can definitely go up against the Echo. There are things that the Echo does better, but you know, maybe let's talk about that next week once we've all tried the Nest Mini as well, and maybe we can do a three-way comparison.
Yeah, we'll reserve that for next week. Anything else you guys want to talk about for this week?
That's about it.
Cool. So we're just hitting the 70-minute mark, and I think we covered a whole lot of stuff from the last 2 weeks. There's a lot of exciting stuff for next week, including the 8T and all the iPhones. And I'm sure Realme will launch like another 8 million AIoT, whatever the fuck that means, products. So
and phones.
Look forward to us not talking about any of that shit. But
yeah, that's not happening.
Yeah, but going into detail about some of the cool
apart iPhone. From the fact that it's going into a landfill.
Right. But we'll have a lot more to talk about next week. But for the 31st episode of the Untitled Gadget Podcast, that's all from us. Have a fun weekend, guys, and stay safe.
Bye-bye.
Take care. See ya.
And keep your mask on, please. Yeah, that's just generally good advice. Thank you.